level down to a dull roar.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to bring the Plumbing Technical Advisory Committee of the Florida Building Commission to order. Our meeting is March 13, 2007. I'd like to call the roll.
All right. Randy Van?
Here.
Gary Duran?
Here.
Gary Cozan?
Here.
Robert Trumbauer?
Here.
Ken Gregory?
Here.
George Seller?
Here.
Kevin Fennell?
Here.
Les Doyle?
Dowell, here.
James Cortez?
Here.
Jorge Gamiola?
Gamiola, here.
And Joseph Cozan?
Here.
Very good. We have a full quorum. We have 11-member TAC. Very good. Today we will discuss and provide recommendations on the following proposed code modifications for the 2007 Florida Building Code. 2700, 2701, 2702, 2703, 2704, 2705, 2706, 2707, 2708, 2709, 2710, 2711, 2712, 2713, 2714, 2715, 2716, 2717, 2718, 2719, 2720, 2721, 2722, 2723, 2346, 2347, 2348, 2331, 2006, 2306, 1998, 2695, 2330, 2676, 2640, 2342, 2340, 2344, 2345, 2343, 2341, and after lunch today at 1 p.m., across the street, we will cover 2009, 2007, and 2008 with a joint meeting with Structural. Can I ask the TAC to approve the agenda, please?
Move to approve, Mr. Chairman.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it looks like we're like one short in one position. Are we going to do anything about it, or just... Joe will have to share with me. I don't care, but if there's a way to set up another position,
we're one computer short.
Two, yeah. Actually. George doesn't have one.
I'll share with
you.
There's one here.
There's a computer here.
I don't
here.
Want to share.
There's a position here.
Right here.
Look him up.
No.
There's a position here. So around.
All right. I'd like to. Ask Jeff Blair if he would go over the ground rules for this meeting, please.
Okay, thank you and welcome, everybody. The process that will be used today is, first off, there will be a standing motion to approve in place, which I'll review in a moment, which the TAC will take a motion to approve. The commission cannot take motions to deny, so everything is the fact that a standing motion to approve. So, the way the process will work is that the chair will introduce the proposed amendment, for instance, Amendment number 2700, amending section 202 of the code. Anybody wish to speak in favor? So proponents will come up first. The proponent will speak first, give their basic summary of the proposed amendment, its rationale, et cetera. Ask if there's any additional people who wish to speak in favor of the proposed amendment. They'll come up. Again, the rule is do not repeat what's been said. Just say I agree and stop there or add new points. So we'll only ask for new points to what's already been said in favor or against, for that matter. After those who wish to speak in favor are concluded, the chair will say, is there anybody who wishes to speak against the proposed amendment? Against, blah, 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 1, 2, 3, however many there are. When that's concluded, does the proponent like one opportunity to rebut? That's not one opportunity for everybody who spoke in favor. It's one opportunity collectively, period, for the proponent. The same works for the opponent. Would the opponents like one opportunity collectively? If agree amongst yourself who this spokesperson will be, that person will come up and provide their counterpoint, if you will. That's concluded. The chair will turn to the TAC and ask if any TAC member wishes to make a second for purposes of approval. If you do, make the second, then it's a discussion at the TAC level. It's no longer open to the public unless the chair wants clarification. If one of the members of the chair would like to have some clarification, want to ask a question, not to discuss it, but to discuss it here amongst yourselves. That's what you're trying to do. If nobody makes a second, if no one wants to support the amendment, you've got a lot to do, don't make a second. The chair will say, is there a second? Seeing no second, the amendment dies for lack of a second. And the amendment is defeated. Do not take time to discuss something that everybody wanted to vote against anyway. That's the way you want to see more than punters. If you don't want to support it or discuss it, then don't offer a second. But once a second is offered, it's for discussion. You discuss it at the TAC. If the TAC member says, look, you know, I like this amendment, but I like this modification, but I'd like to make an amendment to it, you propose the language that you want to change, either strike or underline, and one of the staff will put it up on the screen. The person will say, I propose the following amendment. There's a second to the amendment. Now the discussion is focused only on the amendment, not the entire mod, but just the one amendment. Discuss it, you vote. All in favor say aye, aye. And then the amendment is approved, going back to the modification as now amended, further discussion. Then you take the vote on the proposal as it's been amended or not, and then you move on. Remember, 75% is required for a favorable motion in this case. How many numbers do you have here?
11.
So you have to have a 9-2 vote to support it. Anything less than that is not a affirmative recommendation back to the commission. Remember, you're done today. Those that have 75% are the TAC recommendations to the commission for approval. They'll be posted 45 days opportunity for people to comment on, and then the commission will take them up. So that's the basic process. Proponents, one rebuttal, close to the public, second for discussion, or vote in favor, vote, talk amongst yourself, or if no one makes a second, the motion dies for a lack of a second. Again, make sure you capture, you know, the rationale for if you vote against it, a brief statement as to why should be articulated by the TAC, voted against it, we found no for specific need, fine, that's good enough, or whatever the issue is, it's feel this is, you know, should be in the code and not be removed, etc. Whatever the reason is, it's a brief statement, so staff can capture that. Okay. I'm going to read the standing motion to approve. Randy, you can ask for a motion in a second and take the vote. Okay. Motion is to recommend approval of proposed amendments by the Technical Advisory Committee based on the following findings. The amendment has a reasonable, substantial connection to the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, and the amendment does not degrade the effectiveness of the code, neither strengthens or improves the code, or provides for innovation or new technology by allowing equivalent or better products, methods, or systems of construction, and the amendment does not discriminate against products, methods or systems of construction of demonstrated capabilities, and the amendment has the following fiscal impact. The fiscal impact of enforcement imposed upon local government is as indicated by the tax review. The fiscal impact of compliance imposed upon property and building owners is as indicated by tax review. The fiscal impact of compliance imposed upon industry is as indicated by tax review. And the amendment's benefits noted with regard to fiscal impact and efficacy outweigh the costs imposed. The amendment addresses a Florida-specific need. And the newest one has been added to law. Remember, these are requirements of law. This is not an option. This is what you have to address when approving an amendment to the Florida Building Code. And finally, the amendment does not diminish requirements related to wind resistance or prevention of water intrusion contained in the code or its reference standards and criteria. Ask for a motion to approve that.
Ask for a motion to approve the standing motion process.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay, one other piece is when if a TAC member makes an amendment to the proposed modification or amendment, you must address the findings, the rationale, and the fiscal impact in some manner. So, you know, no additional impact or whatever. Just make sure that you've at least considered that in the context of your amendment. Typically, it's just some language and it doesn't have any, but make sure that you note that. If a TAC member is the person, the proponent for the proposed amendment, that's fine. You can stay at the table. You can stay where you are. You'll give your rationale, and the public will do the normal thing. You'll participate as part of the public in that context. Then once there's a second, you may second your own proposed amendment, and you may vote in favor if you're the proponent. You're not precluded from doing that in this case. No conflict of interest in that for a code hearing. Okay, does any TAC member have a question in the process or anything you didn't understand about what I just described? Okay. Chairman, I think you're ready to roll.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'd like to take just a second to thank George and Joel for entering our TAC. And, we'll all get to know you a little bit better, but thank you very, very much. I can assure you that these two gentlemen are very, very qualified, very, very qualified to sit in this TAC. And we're going to value your input. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
The first item before we get too far down the road, I'm wondering, having reviewed most of these, I'm seeing a number of them tied in our tracking chart where we have two numbers listed. We have two modifications that pretty much say the same thing. One may recall refer to building code, may refer to residential code. But I'm a little bit concerned about the. It seems to me that the ANSI/APSP-7 standard adoption of this standard is contingent upon. Working out some of these other mods. Is that not correct? Is that correct? So it would almost seem to make sense to put this issue behind us before we address this issue first, before we proceeded in too much depth. Would the committee agree with that?
Do you need a motion to that effect?
I would need a motion.
I would move that. We consider the code change relating to APSP-7 head, the first item.
Is there a second to that motion?
I second it, sir.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, there's two parts of that, the ANSI 7 being incorporated into the code, and then there's another code change that would replace the entrapment language in the code. So I would say the first is whether or not the TAC wants to consider incorporating the ANSI 7 into the code, and then the second step would whether or not it would suffice for the code language. And I think if you do that, then a lot of answers would be answered at that point.
That being said, we would be starting with 2708 and 2709, is that correct?
I think the motion related to starting with 2704.
704.
2704.
And 05.
Okay. That would be the first one, Mr. Chairman.
2704, 2705?
That was the motion, Mr. Chairman.
All right, we have a motion and a second on the floor to modify the agenda to start with 2704, 2705. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So 2704, would the proponent of 2704 please state your case?
Good morning, committee members. I want to introduce myself. My name is Jennifer Hatfield, and I'm with the Florida Swimming Pool Association. I've met many of you before. I'd like to first ask if Steve Barnes and Lorraine Ross could join me at the table, if that's all right. I've got two people here as proponents with me.
Provided they don't repeat your comments, that would be fine.
Okay. I'd also like to ask the committee if I could remind us, I'm going to be in front of you guys for 24 of the mods. I wanted to let you guys know that those mods came out of a public meetings that Mr. Gregory held, that these meetings included FSPA members as well as other interested parties. and at the final meeting, all proposed modifications were voted on, and I, on behalf of the industry participants, agreed to submit the 24 mods that are now in front of you. So, and on behalf of the industry, I want to thank Mr. Gregory for holding these public meetings, and we look forward to reviewing them today. And on that note, the last thing I wanted to let you guys know is I'd like to have everyone in the audience who's with the pool industry stand to let you know we're here. And thank you, guys. So on that, we'll go to ANSI 7. The other thing I'd like to ask, if it's okay, there was an ANSI response for withdrawal for calls that came out on Friday. I have copies of this and also a copy of an entrapment chart for the committee members. If I could please pass that out, I'd appreciate it.
Just to clarify, there was a challenge to the ANSI standard. It was heard almost a month ago by the ANSI board, and they responded that the challenge was denied. That's basically what it was. The standard didn't stand as it.
Thank you.
So this just reiterates that the approval of ANSI 7 still has the ANSI approval. There's also a chart that we're handing out that shows you how the five different types of entrapment are taken care of in ANSI 7. And then the third thing I'm handing out is comments from code officials across the United States, including some in Florida, supporting this standard.
Proceed when you're ready.
All right, well, just as a summary, as we know that the FBC currently requires the construction and workmanship of swimming pools and spas to conform to ANSI-approved standards. Currently, there's ANSI 3, 4, 5, and 6 in code. Adding this new approved ANSI standard provides consistency for the pool builders and building officials and will allow for entrapment protection for suction outlets to be installed in accordance with the ANSI 7 requirements. So that's just a brief summary, and I'll answer any questions.
Lorraine Ross, also Antec Consulting. I'm representing the National Pool Association here, the Association of Pool and Spa Professionals, and I just want to add in a couple of summary statements as well. One is that if you look at the criteria that Jeff and Rick before him outlined as to whether or not modification should be accepted, the issue of whether this is Florida specific or not was answered when all of the pool regulations were added into the body of the Florida Building Code in the 2001 volume. So this is certainly a Florida-specific issue. The issue of safety in pools obviously is something that would be considered nationwide, but this is appropriate for consideration within the state of Florida because it is an advance in pool safety. Secondly, when you look at the other items, does this contribute to the health, safety, and welfare of the general public? Probably all of these questions can be best answered by the ANSI response on the challenge that was filed. So the ANSI standard, ANSI 7, does stand. And within the, and it's a long document, I'm not going to read it to you, I promise, but it says in here that there was a challenge as to whether or not this was a safe standard. And ANSI itself responded by saying that ANSI 7 provides for all five known unique hazard categories as identified by the committee based on their review of the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission available epidemiological investigative reporting associated with suction entrapment, which was also supplemented by data obtained from three different symposiums that sought input on suction entrapment, incidences, potential solutions, and solutions under development. So to that extent, this standard does make a leap forward in that it protects against all five forms of potential entrapment. As far as strengthening or improving the code, certainly it is improving the code because it is representing the latest and greatest technology available. As far as discrimination against materials or systems, this standard is very comprehensive. And when you look at the chart that has been provided, it shows that we now have a multiple way of conforming with the requirements contained within this avoidance, the suction avoidance entrapment problem that we have in the state. So it's not limited to one, but there are a lot of choices that are available depending upon the type of pool that you're constructing and the conditions that exist. And the degradation on effectiveness of the code, which is the last criteria identified, it is very clear that ANSI 7 really enhances the code, because when you read through the standard, you'll find that ANSI 7 addresses not only new construction, but it also addresses existing pools out there. And when you look at pools that have been constructed before any suction entrapment standards were in place, those are something that really do need to be addressed. And this gives guidance to pool contractors how to, you know, take care of that existing pool situation. So, you know, I hope that you'll certainly approve and adopt the inclusion of ANSI 7 here, both as a conformance standard and later on as a substitution for the current language in the entrapment section of the Florida Building Code.
Good morning. My name is Steve Barnes. I am the product manager for safety and compliance for Pentair. My role within Pentair Water Pool and Spa is to participate on various standard writing committees, forums like this one. And my role is to interface our company and give back in this forum, and also stay current on changing codes and things so that our company can remain compliant and stay ahead of that curve, if you will. In that role, I am a member of the ANSI 7, APSP 7 Standard Writing Committee. I am also on the APSP Technical Committee. I am a member of ASME A112-19-8, the safety cover, sometimes referred to as the anti-vortex covers, that's referenced in this standard in your current code. I am also a member of the ASME A112-1917 Writing Committee, which is also referenced in your code and also 17. So that gives you a little background on my involvement on all the various levels of components that represent your current code and also ANSI 7. What I would like to do is one, make myself available to answer any technical questions you have about 7, and then also to give you a quick overview. I think it's important, if you would, if you could go to this chart that was just handed out. Real quickly, the goal of this standard and the symposiums and the review of the CPSC data was to make sure that the standard addresses all 5 known and reported forms of entrapment. And those are, and they're broken down from an engineering standpoint in what does it take to prevent the hazard. And that is hair entrapment, that's where the hair tangles in the fitting, or hydraulic drag literally just holds it in the pipe. Limb entrapment is a limb with typically an arm or a foot stuck in the opening of the pipe, and that's with and without suction. Just an open pipe poses a limb entrapment hazard. We have documented cases of that. Body entrapment hazard is probably the most easily understood. That's the differential pressure where you block an outlet and the differential pressure holds you down or holds the victim down. Evisceration is very rare but a devastating injury. And then mechanical is kind of an oddball category, but it's in the CPSC data, and that has to do with jewelry, clothing, things physically trapped or hooked on the drain cover. And there's only one case in that, but we don't want to throw out any potential possibility. Looking to how each of these hazards are addressed, you see on that cover page ANSI APSP 7 standard and then references 5.2, 4.5, and so forth. Those are directly referenced in the standard, and the point of this is to allow you a very high-level understanding of how these technical issues address each hazard. And I'm going to go through this very quickly. Basically, one of the options is that submerged suction outlets are optional. The easiest way to think of that is you have overflow spas spilling into a swimming pool. The water source for the circulation within that spa is coming from the pool. So the water goes from the pool returned into the spa, which then spills over. That body of water that we want healthy, clean, does not have a floor drain in it. That's the easiest to understand option of that submerged suction is optional. So if there is no suction outlet, clearly all of the hazards are addressed because there's nothing there. It has this option has a very long track record in above-ground pools, fiberglass pools, and most common in Florida would be your spa overflows. The next element that becomes very, very important is a listed suction outlet to ASME A112-19-8M. That's the safety cover standard. That's our primary barrier. In the electrical world, I can consider that the switch plate over your lights, your outlets. If you touch it, you're not going to get hurt. That's your first line of defense. That in and of itself will take care of limb evisceration and mechanical. Because it's listed and tested, there's nothing for hair, for limb. You can't access the pipe. Evisceration is protect; it prevents the seal, and mechanical is inherent in the design. What's notably missing here in just the covers, if we just had a safety cover, is hair, because every safety cover, if you put enough water through it, can tangle hair. So that's the first issue. And body. With the current standard, the 19M, it allows for flat grates that are small, circular flat grates that you can seal against. So the current version of 19.8 does not prevent the body entrapment hazard. Makes it very unlikely, but technically doesn't prevent it. So that brings us to the extra layers. If you go down to the next section, you see suction outlet systems required to address body entrapment. That's because of this void we have up above. And if you look the way this chart reads, 4.5 is that safety cover, plus 4.6 is the maximum flow rate. We want to make sure you're not pulling too much water through the pool. Then 5.3 is dual outlets, probably the most familiar to you. And basically, by controlling the flow rate through the system and putting two approved suction outlets, if one is blocked, then the flow through the other. And in this way, all five hazards are addressed. If you go down, you see there are multiple ways of preventing that body hazard. Three or more, the most common place where you find three or more outlets versus just two, is an overflow catch basin. You'll have a negative edge pool. We'll have a small catch basin outside of it, very shallow water, but they still need to be moving a high volume of water, so they will add multiple outlets, not from a safety standpoint, but to keep for air from vortexing in. So the standard codifies existing safe practices, and that's why it's not a prescriptive, just two drains, 3 feet apart, and we're done with this standard. Truthfully, that would address the issues, but that doesn't give the industry and ultimately our end customers options to do other water features that are becoming very important. And I think the three or more outlets is a good example of that. It provides another option. Going down the list, single unblockable could be your great big commercial. More common in water parks, they may be 4x8 steel grating. You just can't block it. So in that regard, the hazard is addressed. Swim jets are, this is a product category that's been around since the early 70s. It's typically mounted in the wall, and it's a combination inlet-outlet fitting. There'll be suction around the periphery of this fitting, and then in the center is a high-volume jet of water, and you swim against it. Okay? It doesn't look like two drains in the floor of the pool, and two drains in the floor of the pool won't make this thing work. So again, it's something that's been around since the 70s. It has a very good track record. APSP7 and the new version of 19.8, the safety standard, specifically address tests. They've kind of been out. That product category has kind of been out here in its own, has a good safety record, but now we're actually requiring them to do some, the standards require them to do a little bit more than they had. And alternative suction systems, gravity flow. Let me speak to gravity flow for a moment. The original version of the draft version of APSP 7 had a complete section on gravity systems, vaults and drawdowns and all kinds of technical things like that that got into prescriptive solutions that conflicted. It was very descriptive of one product category and conflicted with another. The standard writing committee reviewed that, and there was 50 plus comments at the consensus stage of that public comments. And basically, we decided that if these methods with dual or one of these other options of safety covers is good enough for the direct suction of a pump, it's certainly good enough for gravity flow, which cannot create the delta P. So gravity flow is addressed in here in that you just have whatever you have safety covers on it, and that then is controls how that addresses all these entrapment issues and keeps this safety standard out of the realm of engineering hydraulic systems. We just want to, the goal of the standard is safety, not on how to build a swimming pool properly. At the bottom of the page, you see 5.9 outlet sumps in series, and this requires a new construction, an SVRS, a vent, or an additional suction outlet. These you find in pools with in-floor cleaning systems, in which what they are attempting to use is pop-up heads in the bottom of the pool, sweep debris to the bottom of the pool, and by nature you want a large opening that allows the debris to go out to the pump or to a deck canister. That has some additional risk for all kinds of things, because when you have openings sufficiently large for debris to pass out, you have access issues. Therefore, it was the position of APSP writing committee and also of the consensus that needed a higher layer of protection because of access, whether it be clothing, towels, things that could get in there. We want to make sure that the pump suction is terminated at that point. The dual drains, multiple drains, things can lay on top of them and not get sucked in, and that's a big distinction. Moving on to the current codes have reference to, going to page 2 here, have reference to missing and broken covers. And while the APSP writing committee clearly recognized that this is a problem, the only solution that we found because of this chart and this analysis is the only solution is to shut down the pool. Everything behind, we've done some of the other requirements that are built into the way swimming pools have been built here in Florida around the country for a long time, help mitigate those problems. But the bottom line is when you have a broken or missing cover, there is nothing that can be done for hair, because a broken cover's got jagged edges and will tangle hair even passing by it. Limb entrapment, if you have an open pipe, no suction, we have documented cases of limb entrapment where there was no pump running. Body entrapment is continues to be an unknown as previous. Evisceration, this is when eviscerations happen. In mechanical, let's just leave that one out. You know, is a giant unknown. If you look down in the section on the dual outlets, you see that by having two, we still address the body entrapment issue. If a torso covers one of two drains and a cover's missing, the water flows through the other and you've really not substantially changed. So we say, okay, that works. The same is true of three. If you have a large unblockable grate and that cover is broken or missing, we know that's a real hazard relative to the sump itself and access to typically large diameter piping that can be a real hazard. Swim jets, if that cover's broken or missing, if the pump's running, it's blowing you away from it, and gravity system doesn't change significantly, and we already have that, we have the SVRS or vent behind the outlet sumps in series, those debris drains. But you see in all cases, with the exception of evisceration, that these, as soon as a cover is broken or missing, we know we have entrapment hazards, the exceptions being the unblockable and the swim jet relative to evisceration, because it's not possible to form a seal that's required for that particular injury. Now, taking one step further, if you go to page 3, in this scenario, what has been added is a vent, as we understand them today, or an SVRS, according to the ASME A112-1917, which is currently referenced. If you look here, the black check marks represent the impact that that additional product category has. You see that a single unblockable up in the top 4.5 and 4.6, those become, that body entrapment hazard has been addressed. This is really the strong point. Nothing in this standard allows those small single drains that they used to build. But that, if you think of that as the existing pools that are out there that have a single main drain, this is really the strong suit of the SVRS. Vent lines are a lot more difficult, but that's the aftermarket that we are trying to promote as an industry of where these products absolutely make a difference and make sense. You will see from this chart that the addition of these extra layers, as they're sometimes called, does not impact the overall safety of the swimming pool, with the exception of the single unblockable, which now, if they get access to that exposed pipe, in theory, the vacuum could be broken at that point. There's a lot of other hazards that's pretty scary to contemplate. But I draw your attention to how hair is not addressed, limb is not addressed, evisceration is largely not addressed, when even with this extra quote layer that is nice to talk about. It's easy to understand. If you look at this in any of these pages under body, it's the easy one to understand. It's blocked, you're stuck, we can't get off. And it's the easiest one to mitigate through products or system design. That's, I believe, why it gets so much public attention. It's very easy to understand, but it only represents 25% of the reported fatalities. Hair is nearly 50%. Between hair and limb are 75% of the reported fatalities, according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission data. Hair and limb are not easy to show. They're not certainly easy to demonstrate. And I believe that's why the body entrapment has received the amount of attention. We, writing the seven standards, said we will not back off of addressing all hazards all the time, and that's been the focus of this standard. Now I take you to the last page, and with this I will wrap up. What has been done is there is currently some language that requires an SVRS or a vent behind dual drains. So before opposing, you know, extra safety, if you will, the industry carefully has looked at what happens when you actually apply one of these devices or vent technology to a dual drain system. So what has been done is systems have been set up according to the SVRS standard with a single drain, the blocking element, all the protocol that's involved with that, and a venting SVRS, a motor shutoff SVRS, and a combination motor shutoff and venting SVRS, and a shallow vent were all tested on a single main drain and confirmed that the standard as written on a single main drain, they perform just as we like to see them. You block a single main drain, the pump either turned off or you got air in the line, or a combination of the two happened and the blocking element was free. We did it with our hand holding it down and it floats away because the suction has stopped. So clearly, on a single main drain, these products function very well as they are intended to under these conditions. Next thing we did was take dual drains. We put a second one on it, and operating at the 6 feet per second or less as prescribed by the ANSI standard, and we did the very same thing. We pushed the button on the blocking element, it goes down and then pops right back up because the dual drain is allowing the water. In all cases, when that release happened, the SVRS in any of these four variations, and I'll include vent in that, failed to trip because the dual drain already did its job for it. The next thing we did was take the concern is high velocity, so we increased the flow rate of the system until we could exceed 15 pounds and that blocking element would stay on a dual drain system. And then we looked at, okay, this is the concern that's been expressed by some, that that a dual drain system is not good enough. So we said, okay, we'll take it to failure mode. We take it into much higher flow rating than the standards allow and that pool builders are doing. And when you push the button on the machine that comes down per the standard, makes contact with the drain, and then you release, in all cases, the SVRSs did not trip, but that device floated back up due to the water hammer. We saw it with the data logging computer. Okay, so in all cases, the SVRSs don't trip, and the dual drain floated away. What we did then is hold it in place, and it stayed in place. Not hard. You can lift it up with your hand, but it stayed in place, stayed blocked. So now we felt, okay, here is the scenario that we want, that is being argued that SVRSs need to back up. In all cases, with the exception of a shallow vent, which I'm happy to explain if you like it, I'll do it if I'm asked, none of the SVRSs that pass that standard would trip on a dual drain system. The conclusion there is we felt very good that ANSI 7 addresses these issues appropriately and is in no way arbitrarily or otherwise diminishing the current level of safety, even though current codes say because covers may be broken or missing, therefore we want an SVRS. This is not a step backwards in that regard because it is documented that they are not doing what we would like them to do, and that is to trip when one of a dual drain system is blocked and that cover is missing.
Very good. Thank you very much. Do we have any opponents here?
I think there are other supporters.
I'm sorry?
I think there are other supporters. Yeah.
All right, is there anyone else that wants to speak in support of this issue?
Thank you. My name is Dale Greiner. I'm a director of building services for Lake County. And I'm representing Lake County. Some of you know me from being on this committee before. And I'm going to take you back in time, if I might, a little bit. And I'll try to be brief. But I think about 6 years ago, a number of us sat in some meetings in Gainesville. And we heard some testimony. That testimony moved us greatly, and the Florida Building Commission responded to that. We requested the pool industry to get involved. To our dismay, they didn't. So the commission took it upon themselves to come up with what you have in front of you now over the years. Over those years, at the same time, the pool industry woke up. They responded during a lot of code changes.